So tonight our guest is Eleanor Sandreski. Welcome, Eleanor.
Thank you, Dad. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. And so Eleanor is a composer, choreographic pianist, and regular pianist, and very involved in technology, as we'll see. And so I should also add that we always begin our evenings here on this series with a conversation. So we just kind of set the stage, create a little context for what we're going to hear. So let's get right to it. So let me, I guess probably the most, the most unusual thing about your performance tonight is the technology. So maybe you could just give us a little entry into how you got to this point of developing this system that you have, which you call the Wonder Suit.
Yep.
And all of the gadgets that you integrate in your physical movement and performance and your piano playing. So just give us a little entry point. I know that's a lot, but
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm a classically trained pianist. And my piano teacher, my main piano teacher, was also a ballet dancer. So she spent a lot of time talking about body and movement and as a part of playing piano. So it was very much in my mind that the one drives the other. Mm-hmm. And that the expression of playing on the piano comes from your physical movement. And about, 15 years ago now, I was working on a piano piece and I just all of a sudden had the irresistible urge to make an extreme physical gesture as a part of creating that sound. Mm-hmm. And it just felt so right and so sort of, okay, now this is what I need to be doing. It was one of those moments, those big moments. Mm-hmm. And so I started to create work that has very specific choreography in it as a part of the piece, and I played those works and continue to play them actually, but for a while, but the one thing that I kept wanting was to have them initiate sound somehow. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, it wasn't always play move, you know, that if my arm went up, wouldn't it be cool if something happened? Wow, that'd be really cool. Mm-hmm. So then I started to look into that and what would be involved in that, and that is an ongoing odyssey, which has led me to the Wonder Suit. I met a guy who had just graduated from NYU from the technology program there, Michael Clemo, and he had been involved in instrument design and had done some sensor suits,
right,
before. I mean, more like actual clothing instead of this. But because what I do is so specific, I have to play the piano, so that's a lot,
yeah,
to do right there. And then I'm doing the choreography in addition, so it has to be able to accommodate all that movement. And at the moment, we, as you can see, is quite rigid, so it's not accommodating it as well as one might hope. But these are resistors, and so I push on these FSR frequency sensor resistors. Mm-hmm. This has an accelerometer in it, so I can go like this, and it reads that these are potentiometers, mm-hmm, that measure distance.
Right.
And then there's another one on the bench. I have a special custom bench on wheels that spins around.
Right.
And so Mike and I have over the years been developing the system, and it's still quite in the development stages, as you can see. But that's, you know.
It's a little description, an entry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to elaborate a little bit more, so just for the audience, so all of this, certainly the sensors that you touch and all of the movements that you make are tracked in some way and sending some form of information, numbers,
yep,
that you can then direct in any number of ways. So then there's the whole other half, I guess, or at least half. The other part of it is sending that information to the computer and telling it to do something. So that's a whole other area of composition, it seems to me, or certainly of designing an environment, a sound, an instrument even, or think of it as an extension of the instrument, or?
I think it's actually a whole other instrument.
Right.
It's a different instrument. It's, you can't, you just can't approach it at all the same way as you would if you were just playing the piano. Mm-hmm. It's just all this other stuff going on. And you also, compositionally, you can't approach it as just writing a piece for an acoustic instrument, because there are so many more parameters involved, as you noted. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all this information is being sent to the computer, so what are you going to do with that information?
Right.
How are you going to route it? I mean, the possibilities are so enormous, it's a bit overwhelming, quite frankly.
Right. And then there's the piano.
And then there's the piano.
So it's a developing work. When did you begin, really, in this, you know, in this electronic sensor phase of your work? How long has it been since you pioneered, you know, went off into that?
I got the idea, I would say, about my first box in 2007.
Uh-huh.
So kind of recent.
Yeah, so it's...
So I'm still finding my way through all that. And, you know, I mean, really, it's so easy to go overboard and in this kind of a thing.
Hmm.
And the big challenge is to stay simple and focused, because there's so many things. Oh, wow, that sounds really cool. Oh, look, it can do that. And so I'm still struggling a little bit with that, I have to admit, with the wow, that's cool thing. And just to make it sort of straightforward and simple. And I think tonight you'll hear, I've chosen to focus on a couple of kinds of sounds and processes for the whole night, so that hopefully you start to get a feeling of how the sensors work and what's driving what.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of variety from piece to piece in terms of what they're doing. But you know, hopefully you'll get the idea.
Yeah, so we'll be able to make connections between.
Yeah.
Well, great. So, and in terms of the music now, so in terms of your background, were you first a pianist or first a composer, or was it all simultaneous, or how, you know, how is, you know, what's the timeline there? I mean, you're kind of a traditional, it's kind of a traditional model in a sense, the pianist composer, you know.
Yeah.
So in that way. So yeah, I'm just curious about the.
Well, yeah, classically trained pianist. I was a pianist first, and I went all the way through school and came to New York and started playing contemporary music, and that was sort of an aha moment. Actually, I heard Steve Reich when I was at Eastman, and that was my aha moment.
Ah.
I was just totally blown away, by that work and the way the work reacted in the space. I don't know if there's a beautiful hall there called Kilburn Hall that's a wooden room, and it's just the most gorgeous sound in that space. And so when Steve Reich came with his clapping music and the sound started bouncing around and all the psychoacoustic phenomena going on was just fantastic. And that was what captivated me the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was lucky enough when I came to New York to become involved with playing a lot of minimalism and.
Right. So you joined the Philip Glass Ensemble for what, 10, 15 years or a stretch?
13 years. I still play with them.
You still do.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was
from time to time.
Immediately out of school.
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I worked a lot in dance, and that was another choreographer.
Accompanying.
Sort of performing live. So Laura Dean, Dancers and Musicians, at the time in the 80s in particular, was a quite well-known contemporary dance music group. All the music was always live.
Uh-huh.
Steve Reich wrote a lot of the music. They were a couple. They almost got married. Didn't.
Okay.
Anyway. that's neither here nor there, but the fact that there's a lot of music that he composed for her ensemble, and so I was lucky enough to play it.
I see. So and that eventually led to
getting involved with Philip Glass. Yeah.
I see. That's great.
So yeah, I mean, it was really out of the dance work that I started to write music, and so it was. I went back to school and studied composition much later.
Uh huh.
Well, in the 90s, yeah.
I see.
So.
I see. And so, tell us about you. So minimalism is a big influence, or certainly a catalyst, I guess, in your compositional world.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I find it tremendous fun to play.
I see. So where do you situate yourself as a composer, or do you know, what are some of the influences or sort of areas of investigation as a composer? I mean, I see that you have through composed scores or notes on paper, so you're a composer in that way, obviously.
Yes.
Which
yeah.
These days it's not always a given,
right?
But
not everything tonight is through composed.
Well, sure,
but
many composers today don't write notes.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
No, I'm very much a traditionalist that way, mm-hmm. And also I think just the idea of working with harmony. It's not traditional. It's not the traditional way of working with it, but harmony is very important in my work. I think as a pianist, you know, you're just naturally acclimated to wanting to construct chords because it sounds so wonderful on the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
I like beautiful sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Minimalism is absolutely an influence, but so is Brahms, and so is Chopin, and so is Gismonti and jazz, and mm-hmm. So.
I thought I heard some Debussy earlier.
Well, okay. Why not?
Well, great. And are you still also performing as a pianist in other contexts, just as a player, as an interpreter, or have you mostly kind of morphed into doing your own work?
It's turned out that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm certainly not opposed to playing other people's music, but I think... it's just turned out that way. Or if I'm playing in a group, we're playing music by everybody in the group.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of more the context where I'm working these days.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, occasionally I'll go out and do a gig,
right?
Straight up gig,
right?
Which is
some chamber music or something.
That would be lovely.
Or
yeah.
Solo.
Not solo. I mean, I would, as I said, I'd be happy to do it. I just don't. Right. People don't call me for that.
Right. Right. And you're also organizing some of your own events. I mean, you were a founder of the musical at the Music at the Anthology series.
Yeah.
Which continues to this day as MATA.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then more recently, you've been doing your own series at the Spectrum. So that seems to be a strain of your musical life that continues, right? So when did MATA begin? That was quite some time ago, or 15
years?
Yeah,
we started talking in 96.
Uh-huh.
And Lisa Bielava, who's also a wonderful composer and a singer, she and I at the time were both in the Philip Glass Ensemble. We were both young composers. We were both young composers who saw very few opportunities ahead of us. And so we said, Philip, how'd you do it? give us a clue. What can we do? You know,
right.
And his answer was, I know. Let's start a festival. Actually, concert series was what he had in mind, and we started as a concert series and morphed into a festival,
right.
Mostly to maximize resources so that we could get more bang for our buck in 5 days all together,
right.
Then spread out over the year. And since we were both touring quite a bit and with a lot of obligations, doing it all at once was very appealing for that reason too. So that's really how we started, and Lisa and I very quickly decided we wanted to commission young composers. We wanted it to be a place where young composers could have some of their first professional experiences with professional New York ensembles, and we would give them a recording of their commissioned work, and you know, they would meet their peers, and it's been very successful.
Mm, well, that continues to be the model.
I know. It's very amazing to me.
That's wonderful. Yeah. When did, and so at what point did you, it's, did you, I guess you, you resigned or you just,
well,
you,
as an artistic
you passed
director,
it on to somebody.
I became emeritus.
Emeritus. I see. So you're still involved.
Yeah, I'm still on the board and I've got a meeting next week. In fact, festival coming up in April. Yeah, I mean, at a certain point I was living abroad and it just was not practical to keep going. In 2006, I guess it was, Chris McIntyre came in and that was the beginning of
the next
generations, phase, the next generation taking over.
Well, great. Well, it's a wonderful institution that's still very vibrant here in New York, for sure. And then the series that you were doing at Ritz, is that how you pronounce it?
Rétes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Rétes, it's a Hungarian pastry.
Hungarian, okay.
I called it Rétes because every month I was collaborating with a different composer performer and we were creating new works and Rétes is a kind of pastry that has many different fillings. It can be sweet, it can be savory, and I don't know, it just took my fancy at the time.
And you had been living in Hungary.
I was living in Budapest, yeah. So
it's still
it had the nice connection for me that way too.
Rétes. Okay, now I'm glad I should have asked before. But it was a question. So will you continue to do more of those or at some point or?
Well, we're fundraising now.
Right, I see. Mm-hmm.
To do more.
And this is at Spectrum, which is another venue in the Ludlow Street, right?
Yeah, on Lower East Side. Yeah.
Straight that way. Right? So. Well, good. Well, so tonight we have a series of works and improvisations, and I gather all of which are in some way connected with the poetry of Mary Oliver.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that and how you, you know, your connection with her work and how it's, you know, become a something that you're engaging with in your work.
My dear friend Nancy, whom our mutual friends are here, sent me a book of poetry. I had not known Mary Oliver's work, and she just out of the blue sent me this book and said, you know, oh, that you'll love this and it's wonderful and it's been meaningful to me. And so I got the book and of course immediately started to read it and was absolutely blown away. The language is just so beautiful. And I love the way her poems start out talking about something out in the world that everybody experiences, and then before you, like, just on a dime, suddenly she's talking about something deeply personal. That's what appeals to me a lot about that work. The big piece that all those notes are set out for is called The Return, and it's about after it's taking. In the first person, okay, I as the slayer of the Minotaur. That's the perspective of the poem. I have just slain the Minotaur, and so now I'm going through all this emotional release of and noticing. So I'm releasing this anger, I'm releasing this rage, I'm noticing this weird, creepy, horrible place where I am. I'm trying to find my way out. I don't know if you know the legend, the Greek myth of the Minotaur is that he was in the labyrinth in Crete. And so they would send in seven soldiers, or people in there to try to kill the Minotaur. And then the Minotaur would either, okay, if you kill them, you wouldn't get out anyway. So it didn't matter. You were dead. You go in the labyrinth, you never find your way out. Mary Oliver changes that, and she sets it in a dark cave. So there's miscommunication. There's not, you're cut off. There's still a white thread, which is also part of the myth. If you, the Theseus, sorry, I'm not being very clear about this, I know. Theseus takes a white thread and he drags it through the labyrinth so he can find his way out. sort of like the breadcrumbs. And so after he's slain the Minotaur, he does in fact find his way out. So in the poem, she continues that. But first, the cave has these dank and dripping walls. The earth shakes. There's a part where it gets very personal. The person, somebody gave you the thread. So that person, you know, wasn't in your mind when you killed the Minotaur. I can't read the poem to you because I don't have the rights. Mm-hmm. So I just have to try to convey the spirit of it. And so there are six sections, and there's a chorale at the beginning that acts as the thread that comes back throughout. And then there's a very angry part, there's a very drippy cave part, there's a song called I Did Not Think of You. And then there's the earth shakes, and then you find your way out. So that's the...
It's a journey.
And the others, I thought I would start with a couple of... I've set up five sort of sound modules that I'm going to improvise with the suit. So, and those are just inspired by fragments of poems of hers, just the sound in my mind of, you know, flowers in the breeze, or what it sounds like when it's raining. Mm-hmm. The two rain pieces, moths at night. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Mm-hmm. So kind of bringing the poems to life in a certain sense.
Well, you know.
And are these all from a particular collection, or
they are?
Which one is that?
It's the first collection, actually, from the 90s. It's just a collected.
Oh, collected poems.
Collected poems, volume one.
I see, but which themselves are collected from other previous.
I guess so.
Yeah, I see.
I guess so.
But that's where that's your source.
For yes, that is my source.
I'm familiar with. Oh, well, wonderful. Well, it sounds wonderful, and. I think we're up to speed.
Should I turn myself on?
Whenever you're ready. So we'll just change the lights and give you a moment to get yourself calibrated.
Great.
And then we'll continue. And I guess we just continue without an intermission at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right. Thank you.